Good evening. This is In Other Words. I'm Lacey Roberts. Tonight, you will hear conversations with some of the farmers growing food for us in central and western Montana. What image pops into your mind when you imagine a farmer? Or go to that great big worldwide brain, Google, and image search farmer. What do you get? A bunch of men. The women you will hear from tonight may not be this stereotype, but they are part of a growing demographic, women who own or co-own farms. First, I'll speak with Audra Mulkern, a photographer who documents the lives of women farmers through the Female Farmer Project. Then, you'll hear from women who grow food in our region, the owners and interns of County Rail Farm and Courtney Lowery Kogel of Prairie Heritage Farm in Power, Montana. Stay tuned. That's the way that it goes,
that's the way. Hey, Audra.
Good morning, Lacey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
I spoke with Audra Mulkern via phone at her home in Western Washington.
Hi, I'm Audra Mulkern. I am a photographer, and I am currently documenting the rise of women in agriculture. The Female Farmer Project came about when I realized while doing a project called Rooted in the Valley that there were a lot of women farmers and a lot of women farming interns. And I found it so interesting that I kind of took that information and dug deeper to see if there was a story. And there was. I started seeking out women farmers through contacts and through social media and photographing them and visiting them on farm and trying to share their stories. I recently featured six in a piece in Modern Farmer. The focus on that story was women who sort of have left the corporate world and have now joined farming in one way or another.
That's interesting. It seems like six out of however many you've photographed in total. That seems like a pretty high proportion.
It really was kind of shocking. There's a lot of things that kind of shocked me along the way. So many women have to have off-farm jobs to support their farming.
Was that a surprise to you?
Yeah. I mean, statistically, 54% of women have to have off-farm jobs to financially support the farming. So that's certainly a dedication that, while the dedication didn't shock me, it's quite a deep level of dedication.
Did you discover any sort of themes with how women found themselves in farming as a second or third career? Like, how did they get there?
That's something I continue to ask. And the common answer is really about women feeling the need to nurture and do something for the community. Hmm. You know, one of the things I've noticed is that these women are quietly addressing hunger issues kind of behind the scenes. I met many farmers who have been working diligently to try to get farm fresh food into schools for school lunches. Many women who are working on gleaning programs to get fresh food into the food banks. Women who are, you know, trying to get fresh food into disadvantaged areas into the preschools, that it's an empowering way to create an income and a life for yourself, whether you're a male or a female. The rise of women in this field is really at the very beginning. Nationally, 14% of farms are owned and operated by women. I'm hoping that this project continues to encourage young women to take this path, because a lot, the average age of women farmers is 58. So they are kind of aging out of off the farms, and you know, we need to usher the new generation in.
I also have observed a lot of my friends in town, young women who are going into farming or interested in going into farming. And I wonder where that tipping point is even though I sort of observe a lot of them, But those numbers, that number, like 58 or 62, the average age of the American farmer, those are still trending upward. When does that start trending downwards? How many does it take?
I think, you know, because the trend has been really, you know, over the last 2 years, I've certainly seen it, you know, a lot of young people kind of come onto farms, but they're not going to own land for a very long time. That's a really, you know, significant hump to, you know, get over is land ownership. You know, family farms are rare.
Yeah.
Majority of them are family farms, but to be passed down, a lot of family farms aren't being passed down so much. You know, this is anecdotal as well, but, you know, these young people are having to find the financial means to buy land. And that's why I found it so interesting that a lot of women who were very successful in the corporate world were leaving and taking what they learned and buying land and becoming farmers.
You have that section on the Female Farmer Project blog that's the Ask the Farmer.
Yeah.
Could you just talk a little bit about that, explain what that is?
Well, that began as I would pose a question on Facebook. The Facebook page became less me just posting pictures, but more a conversation between the farmers. And so I tried to facilitate that by posing questions that I thought that everybody would benefit from the knowledge.
What are some of the questions that you've posed?
I think one of my more recent ones was asking about how do we start the conversation about farmers earning a living wage. One of the interesting things that I have observed is that they do not earn a living wage often. 54% of them have off-farm jobs. And then I didn't want to lose that conversation in my feed. So I started taking the responses and creating articles out of them.
So I know it's probably like choosing a favorite child or something, but do you have a favorite story or some favorite photographs?
Every time I photograph, I say the same thing. This is my new favorite picture. Currently, my favorite would have to be, I think, I'm really happy with the follow-up story that I did with Siri of Local Roots Farm. I photographed her a year ago, and at the time, her son was 2.5. And I went back to visit her this spring, and she was 10 days away from giving birth to her daughter. So I photographed her with her son, and she was pregnant, and she was still farming. And those pictures are just stunning to see kind of that whole, I call her the grower, you know, she grows so much, family and farm.
Have you been surprised by the feedback to your Female Farmer Project?
It's been overwhelmingly positive, not just from women farmers themselves, because they love reading stories about other women who are facing the same circumstances as them.
Sure.
But from women of all walks, it's truly an empowerment story. The one interesting piece of criticism was that it was on Facebook. Somebody said, you know, women have been on farms since the beginning of time. Why is this new? And it's not new. What is new is the recognition of them being on farm. What's new is that they are now owning the farm and are the predominant farmer on that piece of land. What's new is that a lot of women are leaving and farming is a second career. These things are new.
Yeah, and trending up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for your time, Audra.
Thank you.
I spoke with Audra Mulkern via phone at her home in Western Washington. You can see her photographs at audramulkern.com and click on the Female Farmer Project. Check her out on Facebook, too. She also is always looking for more female farmers to include in the project. So if you are one of those, get in touch via the contact link on her website. She's hoping to plan a trip to Montana soon. County Rail Farm sits about 40 miles north of Missoula, near Dixon, Montana. Tracy Potter Finns and Margaret DeBona, in their 20s and newly married, have been farming up there for 4.5 years. They invited me up to lunch one hot and dry July afternoon.
Pizza that I made whipped up for lunch that has all of our own veggies and cheese on it, including the tomato sauce and...
Yeah, I just would like to point out that she made the cheese and she made the crust and she grew all the vegetables. I guess you.
Also at the table were the farm's two interns. I was wondering why they think there are so many young women becoming interested in farming, and started by asking everyone where their first interest in farming came from.
I don't know. I guess for me, I really enjoy working outside, and. I think I've worked on a lot of farms, like one day a week for a couple of years or doing things like that, like volunteering for veggies, that kind of thing. And I don't know, I think I'm really interested in education, and I think learning where your food is coming from is really important. That's kind of like the side of it that interests me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself ever owning land and running a farm?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it. Yeah. That's kind of a lot
not
of what this
summer.
No, that's a lot of what this summer is about for me is playing with that idea and processing it. The more I'm out here, the more it appeals to me, honestly.
This is my first day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What brought you out here?
Trying to figure out what I want to go to college for and what direction I want to take after high school, because it's coming up fast. So I wanted to see if agriculture and farming was something that I was interested in long term.
What gave you the idea in the first place that it was even an option?
I came up here for their wedding party, and it was so beautiful, and everyone seemed so happy.
Tracy and Margaret are great examples of the trend that Audra Mulkern observes. Young women farmers setting out to provide good food to their communities, beneficiaries of farmers who came before, and committed to strengthening their local food system.
I didn't start out wanting to be a farmer. I started out in the comparative religion department at Bard College in upstate New York. And I spent one summer working for the horticulture department. And I realized that I really loved being outside. And then I got burnt out in the religion program, and I went abroad, and I decided to woof welling workers on organic farms in France and Spain and Ireland. And I loved it. And I came back, and I got a job on a farm, and I started going to school part-time. And from then on, I knew that it was something that I was interested in.
We've sort of been involved in this rebirth of organic farming and sustainable farming. And I mean, I think it started in the 70s with the sort of back to the land stuff, but it sort of changed and become more about local agriculture and less about subsistence. And I feel that, you know, organic or sustainable agriculture is more welcoming to women and also more interesting to women. That's, you know, that's why I'm involved in it, because I find it interesting. And, you know, if I had applied for an internship after college, which I did, people would have hired me. And if I had decided I wanted to grow monoculture corn in Iowa, I'm not sure really how I would get into that and who I would talk to and who would hire a 22-year-old with no farming experience to drive their giant tractors around. You have to find a really special farmer who would be willing to take on that person.
Sure.
But I could get a job on an organic farm with no experience.
Yeah.
I think it's not just organic farm, it's also small diversified farms that women seem to be drawn to. So a small diversified farm would be a farm that is not thousands of acres. Anywhere from 5 to 50 acres, I would consider small. And diversified meaning a number of different crops are grown and rotated through the system. You might have 6 beds of broccoli and 4 beds of kohlrabi and, you know, chickens, a rotating bed of beets and animals in rotation and grains in rotation.
There's a lot of young women in Missoula, approximately our age,
yeah,
who are really interested in farming or yeah, are farming or mm-hmm, are interning or whatever. What are the conversations you have with like other women?
I studied sustainable agriculture and education in college, and I went to college in Bellingham, Washington, and at that school, I spent a really long time designing my own major, and I had to like take all these different courses and combine them, and it was like a lot of work to create this major of sustainable ag. And then I moved out to Missoula, and I thought I had this big leg up because like I had a degree in sustainable agriculture. And then I got out here, and I forget who it was. I was talking to somebody at Garden City Harvest, maybe, and I told them that, and they seemed so unfazed by it. And I very quickly learned that there's this whole program at the university that is sustainable agriculture.
Right.
So I guess what I'm saying is I think Missoula is a community that maybe has that draw already.
Yeah.
To women of our age, or just folks in general, you know what I mean? It's very supportive of that interest in Missoula, which is great, because they have the undergrad and the grad program focused on that. So that's one thing. But I think, I don't know, I think a lot of gals I know, it does have to do with maybe the rhythm of the lifestyle in some ways. There's something unique about working outside all day and really feeling like you can see the product of your work, kind of. And I think that there's also that a lot of people are really into food and into knowing, you know, what they're cooking and where their food is coming from, and growing your own food makes it more, it's more accessible, you know, because a lot of places, you know, organic produce is really expensive. But if you grow your own, and kind of learn about that and learn that whole way of life, it's easier to sustain yourself with just a low, kind of a lower footprint in general. Like a simpler lifestyle. I think it's the simplicity of it in some ways, which is more on the gardening scale, not on the farming scale, you know. Once you get to having your own farm, it's a lot less, you know, it's not that simple.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I probably first got into farming similar to Tracy. I was in school in Maine, and was in college and really not finding the hands-on experiential learning that I was working for. And so I started working on a farm in Maine. And after a semester, I stopped going to school full-time, like Tracy, and started working on the farm more. And I think I just found more of the type of learning that I was looking for there than where I was in college. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up dropping out of that school and moving back west and working on some farms in Washington, too.
For me, was that while working on the farm, when I was in also in college, I found people that I wanted to be around.
Yeah.
And when I was in my classes, I had some friends in school, but for the most part, the people that I wanted to hang out with, that I wanted to get to know more, that I admired and thought were just the coolest human beings, were the people that I met when I was farming. Whether they were working on the farm or own the farm or had the farm next door or, you know, whatever role they played, those were the people that I wanted to be around.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I especially the community and the community around food, too. Mm-hmm. You know, the community around cooking together and making meals together. And it sounds... it sounds silly to say that, but that question that you asked earlier about, like, a lot of, you know, women friends that are about our age in Missoula, I think a lot of it has to do with food, you know? It's, like, fun to cook. Like, I process food to a super extreme every summer. I'm, like, really, really into canning and drying and have been for years. And my old roommate and I joked that we had a problem with it, you know, because we would just put up so much food every year. But it was something that we did together and that we really enjoyed doing. And we both felt like, you know, it's work, but it's really positive, fun work. And then you have this food that maybe you grew and you made and you preserved and you have it all winter.
It is like the perfect antidote to school in some ways.
Right.
You know, because it's like something... Like, you know, it's physical in a certain way. You're not sitting at a desk hunched over a computer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's, like, productive in a way that, you know, I mean, you can look at your paper after you wrote it, but, like, you can eat the food after you make it or you grow it.
Yeah.
I can
feed your friends, too. It's not just that you can eat it, it's that you can feed the people around you, and that becomes a community, and that is an avenue of human interaction where...
Right.
You know, I think about sometimes if we lived in town, I just had three friends from high school and a three-year-old visiting. And if we lived in town, it would have been a huge shopping trip. We would have had to make all this stuff. And it would have been not only expensive for us, but also kind of an imposition. Whereas because we're here and we do what we do, just kind of gathered stuff up. We made what was in the fridge, and we were able to do it pretty casually and quickly. And I really appreciate being able to feed my friends and say, come over anytime, join us for dinner, because it's not a big deal.
I spoke with Tracy, Margaret, Kitty, and Morgan around their dinner table at County Rail Farm near Dixon, Montana. Check them out at the Farmers Market in Missoula or online at countyrailfarm.com. All your life, never seen a
cat in the dark, and then she is the darkness. She rules a life like a fine skylark when the sky is starless. All your life you've never seen a woman taken by the wind. Would you stay if she promised you heaven? Will you ever win?
Courtney Lowry Cogle is a lot of things. Journalist, wife, editor, mom, marketer, farmer. She co-owns Prairie Heritage Farm and lives there with her family in Power, Montana, an agricultural community a few ticks northwest of Great Falls. When I arrived, her daughter Willa ran out to greet me.
Is this your bike?
Yeah.
Cool.
I have two bikes.
Both of them are yours?
Yeah.
Which one's your favorite?
After she put her one-year-old son, Eli, down for a nap, we sat down to talk.
So, could you introduce yourself?
You bet.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Courtney Cogle. My husband and I run a small farm, 30 acres, outside of Power, Montana. We grow heritage turkeys, organic vegetables, heritage and ancient grains, and a variety of pastured animals. New this year. We're sort of the diversified small-scale farm. We have pigs, sheep, turkeys, chickens.
And tell me about where you grew up.
I grew up about 20 minutes from here, which is still just baffles me that I'm here. But I was very glad when we moved here to put 31 plates back on my car back in Teton County after a 15-year hiatus without 31 plates on my car. Grew up on a wheat and barley farm, like I said, 20 miles north of here. I vowed that I would never marry a farmer or be a farmer, and I left as quickly and as furiously as I could.
So tell me a little bit about adolescent to young adult, Courtney.
Right.
You say that you wanted to get out as soon as you could.
Yes. The thing is that I grew up in a small town, and I loved growing up in a small town. Growing up there was really, really good for me because I really enjoyed all sorts of things, everything from sports to drama to writing for the school newspaper and doing that kind of thing. And in a small school, you get to do all those things. And also in a small school, Dutton is the community that I grew up in, and it was really a remarkable place to grow up. And I don't know if all small towns are like this, but, you know, you could really, some people find small towns stifling, and I found it very freeing as an adult or as a young adult, just being able to try everything. And the thing about a small school and a small town was that I felt like, at times, I felt like I was missing out on opportunities that some of my friends in bigger schools and bigger towns were getting, whether those be, you know, just sort of cultural opportunities, being able to go to plays and shows and concerts and that kind of thing. But at the same time, in a small school and in a small community, everybody knew me and knew who I was kind of in my heart. And so because of that, I could do anything I wanted. And they would still accept me. So it gave me this liberty to be a little bit different and to take chances and kind of innovate and be creative. And so it was really fertile ground for me growing up there. And growing up on a farm was even more fertile for, you know, my imagination. You know, I joke that I only had a brother and a bike, you know, when I was growing up. And that really fed my imagination. And I... just being able to grow up in a wide open space and that connection to land and community and just space and aloneness was really good for me. And there were times that I didn't particularly appreciate that, you know, 13, 14, 15, when I wanted, you know, to see more kids my age, and, you know, instead it was me and, you know, riding around on a tractor. around and around and around with my dad. But looking back, those were just really, you know, character and soul building years for me. I feel like it was really a great way to grow up. Not necessarily perfect or magical, but perfect for me.
And then you graduated from high school. And you decided it was time to leave.
Yeah. Well, I went to Missoula, which is, you know, in Montana, if you grew up in small town Montana, Missoula is the cultural mecca, you know. So I went there and started out as a music major, actually. I enrolled as a vocal performance major.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A little known fact about me. The first week they held auditions, and the guy told me that if I was considering music as a career, that he would strongly suggest I look down other avenues.
Oh, God.
So, you know, me at 18, crying in the Oval, walked over across the Oval instead to the journalism department and enrolled as a journalism major. And then I worked for the Associated Press for a while. I covered the legislature for Lee newspapers. I did a few internships. I was the night editor in Omaha, Nebraska, which was kind of the next step, you know, before you got to one of the major metro areas in the AP. And so I was there for a year, and then that's when I kind of got the bug to come back to Montana. And as it turns out, Jacob was doing a graduate degree in Bloomington, Indiana at the same time. We had known each other growing up and had lost touch. He was my all-time crush in high school. Mm-hmm. And still is my all-time crush. And but we had lost touch and moved back to Missoula the same week. And I was covering a public meeting, and he was there. And he asked me out, and the rest is history.
So when you say you got the bug to come back to Montana, where mm-hmm. do you think that came from?
Well, I think the bug was always kind of there. But I think this is true. You know, I got the message early on that I needed to leave both small town and Montana. I think a lot of Montana kids get that message that you should go make something of yourself before you come back, or if you come back. And it may have been kind of my own internal push, you know. I didn't want to be the person who got stuck in Montana. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but for some reason I thought there was that wasn't something I wanted to do, that I wanted to see things and experience other places. And I don't think that's specific to Montana either. I'm sure everyone grows up anywhere decides that they want to leave,
yeah,
fly the coop. But at the time I was covering things I was in Nebraska, and I was kind of watching stuff going on in Montana. And there was just kind of all this growth and change happening at that time that was, you know, kind of the housing boom, and kind of this, all of this new money was coming into the state, and seemed to be at a critical time in kind of the Montana story. And so I wanted to tell that. I wanted to be a part of telling that story. Had the opportunity to start this magazine in Missoula. So, you know, very excited about moving back to Missoula.
So how do you go from journalist starting a magazine in Missoula to farmer in
Powermont? So, yeah, it's a crazy ride. Well, we were in Missoula. Jacob and I were in Missoula. And I was doing a lot of coverage of rural issues, and in particular, kind of rural flight and kind of what's called the brain drain in rural America. And at the same time, Jacob was working on his master's in environmental studies and kind of got the farming bug and started working at the Pease Farm in Missoula with Josh Lotnick and Jason Mandala. And kind of that's where he got his first bug. And then he also took a politics of food class that sort of sent him right over the edge. And one day he walked into our house and he's like, you know, I think I want to be a farmer. I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't into that at first. 'Cause I had always had plans on, you know, my ultimate dream was to be able to buy a place in the country, have a few kids, and write. That was kind of, you know, I always imagined us in a more mountainous region doing that. And then once I got got sucked into the food world too, and you know, my parents farmed until I graduated from college, and they sold the farm then after several pretty brutal years trying to make it work. And they asked both my brother and I if we wanted the farm. We said no. but I missed it. I missed the farm a lot. And when you grow up connected to a place like that so intimately, I know everybody connects to their place, but on a farm, it's a different kind of connection. And I missed that. I missed that sense of rootedness. And I also missed small town. And Jacob was doing also a lot of research on kind of the dwindling of the contracting of small towns, and because he also grew up in a very small town. And we just decided that we couldn't complain about these things if we were part of the problem, and we were the ones who grew up and left and got educations and took our skills and talent and passion somewhere else. And so we decided that we wanted to move home. And in central Montana at the time, there wasn't any, there weren't very many small farmers doing what we're doing, you know, the diversified, organic, sustainable, locally based farms. And so we felt like, number one, we could be a part of building that movement here, and number two, there's obviously a market for it because there's nobody else doing it. So we got the opportunity to lease some land near Conrad, and leapt at that opportunity and leased for 4 years, and then bought this place just about 2 years ago. It's a good life, and it's a great way to raise kids. We went out and did chores today, the two of us, and I remember as a kid doing chores with my dad at 5 or 5:30 in the morning. And I just hated it at first. And we were doing, you know, I started doing them when I was like 10 or something. And just precious, super precious moments, you know, watching the sunrise, you know, giving the cows their first little slice of hay, and, you know, breaking the ice for their water. Like, just those things. I really appreciate it. And this morning, Willow was like, I want to do chores with you. So I said, sure. And it takes me, you know, four times as long to do chores when she's with me. But man, it was so fun. You know, we're walking down, feeding the pigs. She's holding my hand. And, you know, she's telling me about all the plants. Like, Mama, look at the cabbages are almost ready. And there's pea flowers. She loves to eat the pea flowers. And just kind of, just to know that she's connecting with a place like that is just makes it all worth it. And sometimes it doesn't, this life does not feel worth it, but But on days like this morning, it's totally worth it. You know, no matter if, no matter how many bunches of kale I sold yesterday at farmer's market. At the farmer's market, someone was trying to negotiate a better price for some greens, and I thought, you know, geez, people don't want to pay anything for food, and they don't want to pay anything for information. I am in the wrong business. I made two very poor career choices.
So you're a farmer and a journalist, and mm-hmm. it sort of made you, you kind of have this farm communicator sort of role you've created yes. for yourself. You have a blog, you write, you're a guest writer for other blogs.
Right.
What's that like?
It's fun. I really enjoy it. And it makes, you know, it's a slippery slope, writing about your life and kind of this personal narrative genre is a difficult one to keep your arms around sometimes. It's a very popular one right now. And there's so many women with my same story in particular, you know, moved back to the farm. For some reason, they're often journalists, like Kristen Kimball, who wrote the book The Dirty Life. So there's a genre. I'm like definitely part of this wave of kind of, you know, women farmers who are documenting their lives. And I go back and forth about how much I share. You know, I'm traditionally an oversharer. I have been since I was a child, and it only makes sense that I'm sharing a lot now in the age of social media when everybody's an oversharer. But it's been fun. It helps me. It gives me a different perspective sometimes on my life to be able to write about it. And I think that's one of the reasons that I got into writing to begin with, even as just a small girl. My life suddenly sort of made sense and had, I could sort of figure things out better if I wrote about them. And so that's really my main motivation for writing, which sounds a bit selfish now when it comes out of my mouth. But it's true. You know, I connect the dots more and kind of feel differently about things and make sense of complicated situations better if I'm writing about them. And this is a very hard life sometimes. And so it's nice to be able to extract something else from it, I guess.
Yeah.
Extract some other meaning from it.
Can you tell me about what your day is like? As a farmer and a mom and a writer and all the things that you do.
Yeah. So let's see. A typical day. Well, yeah. I usually spend, you know, all day Thursday harvesting and packaging, getting ready for our community supported agriculture, farm share delivery. That happens with the help of a local 12-year-old girl who is helping take care of the kids while I harvest. And then this Thursday in particular, our harvest day, Jacob's a substitute rural mail carrier. So he was gone, and we also hired a 17-year-old girl from Fairfield to help us on a few days a week. And she was also gone this week because she's at the county fair doing livestock judging. So anyway, so we were down to just me. But my in-laws totally saved me. My father-in-law and I harvested for 50 people plus a huge wholesale delivery, you know, while Jacob was on the mail route. And then Jacob ran into town. You know, I took care of the kids, finished up the rest of the wholesale order. And then Friday morning, Jacob harvested more before his 7 o'clock shift carrying mail. And then I scramble around, get the kids ready, do some work, get the next day's stories ready, edit whatever else is coming in, answer a bunch of emails, send out the weekly newsletter for our CSA. Meanwhile, you know, often there are times like this week was just obviously very crazy. And so in order for me to be able to get an hour in of like bunching and tagging kale for our wholesale delivery, I took the hose and filled a gigantic mud puddle in front of our packing shed so that the kids would stay within eyesight. So that was the only way that I could buy myself that extra hour that I, you know, I had to get this thing done. So they were just totally muddy. Get them, you know, in the bath, get all their stuff packed up, and then wake up the next morning, go to farmer's market, leave the kids with Grandma and Paca, pick up pizza on my way back from farmer's market, and then kind of Sunday is our kind of day of rest. We try not to work on Sundays.
That sounds exhausting.
It's exhausting. This last 2 weeks have just been particularly exhausting. It's like sometimes there are so many things happening at once, and I had this moment yesterday where I had spent the morning at the farmer's market, and it's been kind of slow. I think that's partially because, it's partially because all we have is like really greens. And so I don't think we're kind of drawing people in quite well enough. So, you know, this was kind of a somersault, you know, this cartwheel to get everything done. So I grab my phone. I'm walking in, you know, with pizzas in one hand, phone in the other. The pizza starts slipping. I drop my phone. It shatters. My phone is completely shattered. And I had this moment where I was just like, this juxtaposition of this simple, old-fashioned life that we're trying to create here that necessitates all of this modern technology. Customers are texting me and emailing me, asking me for recipes, asking if they can pick up later. I'm also constantly getting emails and texts from people at work. Means that in one slip of my hand, I lost $500 after both Jacob and I working nonstop since 5 a.m., already put in a, you know, an 8-hour day to make $200 between his job and farmer's market. So sometimes it's it really hits me that this thing that we're doing is so two worlds, you know, and we're trying to reconcile the two. And that can be just kind of soul splitting sometimes when you realize that. you know, I feel like we're not making a living doing the farming yet. You know, we both have these off-farm jobs, and that's a huge, huge struggle to do everything all at once and without childcare, you know, just. On the other hand, all of these worlds blending is terribly complicated, but it's also kind of great, you know? It's also just awesome that on a Monday afternoon, I get to hang out with my kids, you know, bunching kale. My kids know what kale is, you know? My kids know what a pea flower is. They know what a head of cabbage looks like. And I can't put a price on that. And I can't put a price on the fact that, you know, on being able to live in this place. So I know I should be more of a free marketeer and probably like if this, I don't know if maybe not free marketeer, but you know, but if we're not making it as a business, then maybe we shouldn't be in business, you know. And there's a little birdie in my head that says that. On the other hand, we're providing really good food to people. And eventually, I hope that the money will follow.
And ultimately, your business is a lifestyle. It's not...
It is.
It's just a business.
Yeah.
It's everything.
It's everything. And, you know, growing up, Jacob and I, when we first started farming, we butt heads on this big time. I still remember this. He when we first started, he did an interview with a magazine, and he said, I can't remember what the quote was, but it said something. He said something about The reason that he wanted to farm was he wanted to blend his work and his life. That he didn't like his previous kind of career in which his life was separated from his work. And I loved that about him. I love that he sees things that way. On the other hand, I grew up in a place where the farm infiltrated the life. I struggle a lot with that because it was difficult growing up. We didn't go on vacations during the summer because there was stuff to do. There was work to be done. You know, we weren't out boating or camping or skiing or the other things that are taking vacations the way that families, you know, other families were doing, because we were always working. And that's something that I really struggle with still sometimes. I wonder, I'm always kind of doing the cost-benefit analysis in my head of what kind of childhood I'm giving my kids and what lessons I'm teaching them, because I didn't learn how to relax. There's lots of complaints that my generation didn't learn how to work growing up. I didn't learn how not to work. And I don't know which is worse. So there are times when, you know, Jacob and I, we have to look at things really, really carefully and make sure that we aren't just working to work. And that we do still take time to relax, if not for anything else, just so that our kids can learn that life isn't about just work. So the tricky part of this, allowing your work to be your life and your life to be your work, is that if you're a workaholic, you're just always working. If you're super lazy, you're never working. You know, you really have to be clear, very clear with your boundaries. And that's something we've been struggling with. But I think we're almost close to finding a balance.
One thing struck me that I read on your blog from a couple years back about how your mom was a farm wife and you're a farmer.
Yes.
Can you sort of explain what you meant by that?
Yeah. My mom is doing what back then was doing the same things that I'm doing now. Only she called herself and was called a farm wife as opposed to a farmer. And now I feel like there are more and more women in my position are making the point, and I think it's a good one, that we are just as much a farmer as our husbands are. I mean, that's a tough distinction, and I think it just varies so much from woman to woman. Right now, I'm not doing a whole heck of a lot of the production of the farming. I'm doing all the marketing. I'm doing all the customer management. I'm doing, you know, a fair amount of the harvesting and kind of packaging and kind of the retail stuff. And my husband is the first one to say that that is, you know, just as valuable to the operation than who's out there weeding the carrots, you know. I realize that I'm a fourth generation farmer. Starting out, you know, so my dad was a farmer. My dad's dad was a farmer. My dad's dad's dad was a farmer. My dad's dad's mom was a farmer. My dad's mom was a farmer.
Around here?
Yeah, in Teton County, believe it or not. So I'm a fourth generation farmer in this area. And on my dad's side, I'm the only one still farming, which is kind of crazy. I never would have expected. My dad probably never would have expected that I would be the one that was out of the Lowry clan that was still farming.
If you stopped farming, mm-hmm. If you guys did give up the business, and what would you do? Where would you go?
No, I wouldn't leave here.
You would stay here.
I would totally stay here. And we would continue growing a bunch of stuff. You know, that's the funny thing. Like, this is what we'd be doing even if we weren't. This is what I'd want to be doing even if we weren't making money at it. I decided I was going to take Friday afternoon off with just the kids, and I was trying to figure out what we could do. And we ended up planting a garden, which is totally ridiculous. And I don't know why exactly I did it. It is cool to be a farmer, you know, in some circles, I guess. I think it's cool to be a farmer. You know, it's a noble, good thing to be.
I spoke with Courtney at her home in Power, Montana. Check out Prairie Heritage Farm at the Great Falls Farmers Market or online at prairieheritagefarm.com. I'm a particular fan of their prairie farro, so keep an eye out for it. Courtney blogs at lifecultivated.com. And that's all for our hour with In Other Words this evening. I'm Lacey Roberts. Good night. Take old John on the island. I place him in a kettle of oil. Then the angels came from heaven down. Told him that the old boy, I got the keys to the kingdom. The world can't do me no harm. I got the keys to the kingdom. The world can't do me no harm. Take old Paul and Silas, place him in jail below. Then the angels came from heaven down, unlocked that prison house door. I got the keys to the kingdom. The world can't do me no harm. I got the keys to the kingdom. The world can't do me no harm. I know the men are gonna